This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Policemen displaying their brute power to a group of villagers and fisher folk in Sompeta in Andhra Pradesh's Srikakulam district. The locals were protesting against the setting up of a thermal power plant in the area. With over 3,000 villagers from surrounding villages descending on the foundation laying ceremony of the plant, despite prohibitory orders in place, the police opened fire.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
I'm hoping my bank account will still be open next Monday. Most of us are trying to get through just the next week. Half of us can't live without the next paycheck. Will Europe survive? I don't know. Despite the smiling faces of banking experts on TV, too many signs say, "Welcome to the Great Depression." And some 1930s-style slowdown isn't the worst thing that I could imagine happening. In the constant drumbeat of these down times, it's pretty hard to care about what is happening somewhere else, in places we don't ever hear about. That climate stuff, that's years away, too, except for the weird weather this year.
Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion, I was soaring ever higher.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. I'm going to try and convince you that a relatively small island on the other side of your world can break the climate wide open. Strange fires in Asia helped start the hottest year on record before 2010. They are burning again right now, blanketing Southeast Asia with acrid smoke and loading up the atmosphere with a brand new burst of carbon, possibly as large as the exhaust from every car on Earth. That same tropical forest blaze, larger than the Amazon fires, is on Sumatra, which is part of Indonesia. What happens there could determine whether we make it as a civilization or eventually as a species. Don't believe me? Keep listening. We'll hear from Dr. Florian Siegert in Munich, Germany, who can see it all from space. Indonesia is also the world's second largest coal exporter. That feeds the second largest coal power race on the planet, and I'm talking about India, where 173 new coal-fired power plants have been approved this year alone. It's a mania that is already failing in its own way, even while it destroys so much. Peasants and fishermen have been killed by police, protecting coal plant sites from protests. The scale of ecological damage is amazing, the threat to our climate frightening. We don't hear anything about this, as we pray our jobs will keep going or worry we'll never get another job. But we'll talk with Indian electricity expert Shankar Sharma to get the real picture. You'll hear the sounds of protests and learn how this global coal resistance is hooking up Indian peasants to the poorest people in Appalachia, USA. We won't have to wait until 2050 to find out what happens if the coal rush plays out. As Steve Connor, the science editor for Britain's Independent newspaper, wrote on July 5th, pollution from the one new coal plant a week in China has hidden the true meaning, the warming impact, in a phenomenon known as global dimming. The new Indian coal plants, growing like mushrooms along the coast, will do the same for a few years. But that protective smog lasts only a few years at most and could clear in less than a month if production suddenly stopped, perhaps after a solar flare or a really big economic breakdown or riots. When the wisps of smoke, as James Lovelock called them, when they're washed out of the atmosphere, we could experience a severe heating event. This could manifest locally or globally. No one knows. I asked Dr. Florian Siegert about this and whether the peat fires of Indonesia in 1997 helped power the planet into the record-breaking heat of 1998. Our guest is Professor Florian Siegert from the GeoBio Center of the Ludwig Maximilians University in Munich. His research specializes in the use of satellite sensors to monitor changes on the ground, especially in tropical and subtropical forests. Currently, he is funded by the European Commission for a project called Red Flame. There's two D's in that red, and it's Fast Logging Assessment and Monitoring Environment, a tool to detect logging and fire damage. Dr. Siegert, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yeah, hello.
Before we discuss the specifics of Indonesia, how would you describe your work to an ordinary person?
We use satellites to monitor the Earth's surface and how humans impact forests and other types of vegetation. So we monitor changes of the Earth's surface.
How is that possible? How can you do that?
So in the past 20 years, maybe around 100 satellites have been launched by various countries, and we use maybe 10 or 15 of them. So satellites which make photographs of the Earth's surface, let's say every month or every week, and also radar satellites. Radar is a specific wavelength which penetrates clouds, so we can get weather-independent pictures and images from the Earth's surface.
Well, I'm calling you today, Professor Siegert, because Indonesia really came into world climate consciousness due to major fires that started in 1997 and they continued into 1998. It was difficult to miss. Choking smoke blew over Malaysia, Singapore, much of Southeast Asia. And my first question is, do you think that smoke would have had at first a bit of a cooling effect like the Asian brown cloud discovered by Professor V. Ramanathan at the Scripps Institute?
So I'm not a climate specialist, but what I know from reading, from the literature, true, it had a very small cooling effect.
All right, but really what we were interested in is the heating. What can you tell us about the climate impact of that major Indonesian forest fire?
Yeah, so we were doing work in Indonesia the years before, ecological work, and at that time then, in 1997, huge fires occurred in Indonesia, and we started to investigate how could this happen and also the extent of these fires. So we started in 1998 some remote sensing work using, as I said, radar satellites and optical satellites to map the burned area and also the type of vegetation which has been burned. And at that time we could show that the major contribution to carbon dioxide emissions came from peat fires. So peat is like a swamp ecosystem. It's a huge pile of biomass, which is not decomposed because it's waterlogged. And at that time, the government of Indonesia started to dig irrigation canals into these peat swamp forests. And when the El Nino weather condition came in 1997, all these peats were drained severely through these canals, and then the fires, which were ignited by, let's say, farmers or people who wanted to clear land for plantations, they came out of control and burned huge areas of land, and especially peat land.
And what would that have done for carbon emissions?
So, yeah, at that time we published, then, so in 2001, we published a paper showing how much carbon dioxide has been released by this single event. And it was very, very significant. It was 15% of the total emissions of all human activity at that year. Mm-hmm. So only from peat fires in Indonesia, not all the forest fires. There were much more fires in 1997 in Amazonia and other parts of the world, due to the extended drought. But from the peat fires alone, so Indonesia contributed in 1997 15% of the total emissions by burning fossil fuels and whatever, gas, everything.
That is an amazing number. As you know, 1998 was declared the hottest year on record, at least until 2010.
Yeah.
Is it possible that the forest and peat fires created a burst of carbon that helped to make that year hotter? I know there were other problems like El Nino, but could this have contributed to a hotter year?
Probably. So at least the carbon dioxide measurements at the Mauna Loa in Hawaii show a doubling of the carbon dioxide emissions in that specific year, in 1997. So you have an every year you have an increase in carbon dioxide, but in that year we had a doubling of the increase. So it was measured directly, the carbon dioxide concentration.
And I realize, again, you're not a climate scientist, but my question is there a lag time between when carbon or even methane goes up into the atmosphere and we feel a heating, or does it happen more or less right away?
I don't know. I would guess if you measure higher carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere, then you have more heat trapped in the atmosphere as soon as you measure it. But there are complex processes. Yeah? The oceans absorb carbon dioxide, vegetation is growing, and so on. So nobody can measure all these processes, but they are models for that. But I guess that once, if you measure the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, you have the heating.
It makes sense. Well, once again, right now, in early September 2011, smoke from fires on the island of Sumatra has reached Malaysia and Singapore, and Singapore's talking about sending firefighters, and Indonesia is talking about seeding the clouds to make rain. What do you know about what is going on there?
Well, we have right now several people working there, doing studies, measurements of biomass, of peat depths, and so on. And we also do LIDAR flights. So with airplanes, we fly a LIDAR instrument to measure the carbon stock in trees, in forests, and to really get better figures about the dimension and the role of these Indonesian fires. So they are almost every year, but in El Nino years, they are much stronger. More fires, more haze, and so on. And this year, 2011, is the first year after two La Nina years, which were very wet in Indonesia, and it was hard to start a fire for land clearing. So people have now a lot to do because they couldn't do it the past 2 years. So that's why we have many fires in 2011 again.
So these fires are directly related to logging and land clearing. They're caused by humans?
Yes, of course. So I haven't read anything about fire by lightning, so nobody has written on that, and I never observed it. So usually in the very wet tropics, like in Indonesia, lightning is always comes with water, with rain. And so to our experience, and this is now more than 15 years, almost 100% of the fires are started by humans. On the one hand, small-scale farmers, they clear land, maybe 1 to 5 hectares for their personal production. But more important are the fires from investors and plantation companies like oil palm and so on, who use fire to clear the land for the establishment of the plantation.
So with your satellite research tools, can you see the conversion of tropical forests to, say, palm oil plantations? And if so, what have you found?
Yes, so we monitor some regions in Indonesia regularly. And we see, of course, the expansion of the palm oil business, especially with the biofuel hype. So this really accelerated again the palm oil expansion in the past 2 years.
It's an odd spin-off, really, from green thinking. In fact, I heard that some of the palm oil was going to Holland to offset to other types of fuel. This is a biofuel. So
yeah, it's crazy.
It isn't that green if it causes more climate change.
Yeah, so we really could show that if palm oil is established on peat, you release 5 to 10 times more carbon dioxide then you save by establishing the oil palm and using the oil palm for 25 years period. So you release five times or up to 10 times more. And you must know that most plantations are now established in peatlands because these are the only uninhabited land in Indonesia. Yeah? Indonesia has 240 million inhabitants. And so all the good soils are settled by people. And peat soils are poor soils. They are still forest covered. And this is the place where the new plantations become established.
Well, that's sort of expanding humanity. The other thing that confuses me about peat is usually when I think of that, it's Ireland or in Scandinavia or Canada. Why are we talking about peat in Indonesia and how much of it is there?
It's absolutely significant. So Indonesia has 70% of all tropical peatlands, but probably there are much more peatlands in Amazonia and Africa, not yet discovered and characterized. So Indonesia, so far, Indonesia has 70%, and the boreal, so peat in boreal in colder regions, is from the area, the much bigger in size, but the volume, so the peat is much thicker in Indonesia, up to 15 meters thick, a pile of 15 meters of biomass. So it's an absolutely significant portion of the total peat on Earth is located in Indonesia.
And once peat starts burning, it's very, very difficult to put it out.
Almost impossible because no water is available. You would need helicopters and so on, and this equipment is not available in Indonesia. So, and it's also too expensive.
And then we're also losing some biomass and some carbon into the air from just logging tropical rainforests in Indonesia. Do you know how much Indonesian forest is being lost? Can we compare it to the Amazon?
Very difficult because there are no nationwide satellite monitoring systems working. So we work only on smaller areas, yeah, let's say hotspots, but nobody has a figure for the whole country except FAO. And FAO has done the last, but they do it using country statistics and so on, yeah? So not really remote sensing, and if so, only with a sampling scheme. So nobody has a real figure, but at least in Indonesia and Southeast Asia, there are the highest rates of deforestation, higher than in Amazonia and Africa.
Why is the European Union monitoring forest destruction on the other side of the world?
Yeah, I think so. Timber, so Europe is still buying a lot of timber from tropical countries, and there's concern about that we should stop that to protect these forests because of their role in climate change, so carbon storage and so on. And so I think the EU is financing research to find out more about the dimension of logging and so on.
And looking at what we could be doing about this forest damage in order to prevent climate change in a country like Indonesia, are there people working on policies? Do you have ideas on what we could do to slow this down at least?
Yes, so currently in the World Climate Negotiations, there's a scheme called REDD, Reduced Emissions by Avoided Deforestation in Developing Countries. So this is a financing scheme where rich countries pay poor countries to preserve their forests.
And it seems to me as we wrap up that we're not necessarily talking about big evil corporations here. Where you're talking also about small people just clearing the land in order to live. Is that the case?
No, I would say the dimension, so more fires are ignited by farmers, but the severe fires, so the fires with large-scale impact, are started by companies. So I would say much more destruction is done by companies and investors than by small farmers.
Well, thank you so much. We have been speaking with Professor Florian Siegert. He's from the GeoBio Center of the Ludwig Maximilians University in Munich. Dr. Siegert specializes in satellite monitoring of land changes in tropical and subtropical countries. Professor, thank you so much for sharing your valuable time with us.
Thank you.
I am Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Just to quickly review, Indonesia is burning off tropical forests faster than anywhere else on Earth, including the Amazon. This releases vast amounts of carbon into the atmosphere. Even so, the carbon emissions from Indonesian peat fires is even greater. Scientists calculated Indonesian peat fires amounted to 15% of all greenhouse gas emissions caused by human activity in 1997. 15%. A huge burst of carbon that was measured immediately at the Hawaii measuring station. The rate of increase of CO2 doubled at the Mauna Loa station that year. 1998 was the hottest year on record until 2010, you know that. This single peat fire bomb in 1997 may have triggered the continuing increase of global warming gases around the world from other natural sources. Think about that. And research at the University of Exeter, led by Dr. Sebastian Wiesorek and Dr. Peter Ashwin, suggests that as global temperatures rise, some peat can spontaneously catch fire, like an overheated compost pile. We don't know when or if that will happen. Although up to a third of carbon dioxide has been grabbed by the ocean, the impact of carbon bursts from peat fires is more or less immediate. The greenhouse effect does not wait for years or decades. The existing carbon raises temperatures immediately, except for any temporary cooling effects from the smoke. There is more tropical peat in the Amazon of South America and in Africa, but we think Indonesia has the most by volume, up to 50 meters or 164 feet deep. If the peat in the northern permafrost thaws, dries, I'm talking about Canada and Russia and Scandinavia, and then it burns, a major extinction event is inevitable. That hasn't started happening too much, but we have had reports of peat fires in the north. More carbon is being released from forest fires in Indonesia and Southeast Asia than in the Amazon. Hardly anyone knows this. There's no campaign comparable to saving the Amazon. The Indonesian peat fires are largely caused by corporations and foreign investors. Yes, there are some small farmers clearing, but the big fires, the ones that really put the carbon up there, come from foreign investors. Some peat forests have been drained and burned for palm oil plantations. That is supposed to create a so-called green biofuel. Some of it sold in Europe, claiming to help the climate. In reality, when we remember Indonesia, palm oil from peat lands is among the most climate-damaging fuels on Earth. Palm oil biofuel taken from cleared peat lands releases 5 to 10 times more carbon dioxide than the fuel actually burned in the car or the power plant. This project is dangerously insane. The peat fires are back in 2011. In mid-September, the Indonesian government acknowledged 1,200 hotspots on their island of Sumatra. Thick smoke blankets Sumatra and pollutes Singapore and Malaysia to the east. In desperation, Indonesia is trying to create rain. There are complaints from the government of Singapore. There is no other way to put the peat fires out. Hundreds more fires have broken out on the nearby Kalimantan area, which is Indonesia's part of Borneo. By the way, that's a new name to learn, Kalimantan. Forests are being burned there to clear the land for more and more open-pit coal mines. A UN study in 2005 claimed Indonesia is the world's third-largest emitter of greenhouse gases. The government of Indonesia disputes this and protested. Since there is no true country-by-country measurement of emissions, I can't believe that, but there isn't, beyond the untrustworthy figures given by national governments now and then, we really can't tell. We do know this. On top of those humongous peat fires and record-breaking burning of other tropical forests and deforestation in Indonesia, that country provides enough coal carbon to reach a high rating among world polluters. This is information you need to know. If the latest flooding from extreme precipitation events missed your area, lucky you. Maybe drought hasn't burned away your local agriculture yet. Maybe the freaky summer beach weather in early fall is really fun. But we are only partway there. I still hope to persuade everyone that on this small planet, no matter what the headlines about the economic breakdown may be, events in Asia are set to destabilize the climate for thousands of years. Indonesia is the second largest exporter of coal in the world. Russia trails far behind at number 3 with half the coal exports of Indonesia. In 1985, Indonesia mined 2 million tons of coal. By the year 2000, that was 233 million tons. In 2010, it was 320 million tons, with 380 million tons projected for 2011. Indonesia depends on coal power for its own growing industrial base. In 2008, Indonesia burned 79 million tons of coal, mostly to produce electricity, and exported 160 million tons, twice the domestic consumption. The country's lower-grade coal is only suitable for burning in power stations, so it is called thermal coal. Indonesia is the world's largest provider of seaborne coal to power stations. The government of Indonesia does not plan to cut back its carbon emissions to save the climate. Locally, Indonesia plans to expand coal as a source of energy from 17% to 33% by 2025. That includes replacing oil by liquefying coal, a horrible, dirty way to get energy. The country has 35 new coal-fired power plants planned, but only half of them are being built so far, according to Greenpeace. The national energy policy of Indonesia is to double coal exports. The country has mostly lower-grade coal, as I said, and it burns less efficiently, and it throws out lots more carbon, and it's being almost used exclusively to fire electricity-generating plants. While there are plenty of coal ships running from Indonesia to China and Japan and every Asian country, the biggest customer is India. India will drink up the coal of Indonesia in a wild national dream to build hundreds more coal plants. Really, it's a dark nightmare. If the Indian coal plants become reality, life as we know it seems doomed. Radio EcoShock will be right back with the incredible coal power Ponzi scheme in India, plus an interview with Indian electricity expert Shankar Sharma. But first, this sample from Dan Mangan's new album, O Fortune, titled How Darwinian.
In the cars, in the beds where they sleep, in the alleyway behind the fast food chains where they eat. People don't know what they want, they just know they really want it. I should know better by now. There's only so much to go. Like a dog at your feet, I will see the world the way that it seems easy to see. See, I don't know what I want, I just know I really want it. I should know